This is Steve Sherlock with another internet radio show, or podcast, number 190 in the series for Franklin Matters. This recording shares the Economic Development Subcommittee meeting held on Wednesday, January 8th, in the third floor training room at the Municipal Building beginning at 5:45. As a side note, it was listed to start at 5:30, and since I had covered the Board of Health meeting, which was finishing at 5:40, I was expecting to get to this one late. However, I was able to get there just in time for the start. I've listed the agenda in the show notes. There's good insights on the solar farm business overall as they start discussing the background for the first item on the agenda, where some changes to the ground-mounted solar bylaw amendment are proposed. The meeting runs around 45 minutes, so without further ado, here is the Economic Development Subcommittee meeting of January 8th.
Economic Development Subcommittee meeting to order. We have a quorum here, and this meeting may be recorded by audio or video.
It is.
It is.
And should I read the subcommittee?
No.
We all know that Debbie's going to be extra. She can't talk.
And I can't talk.
Right.
You can actually until Glenn gets here.
Right. Because there isn't.
There's not a quorum on the council.
Oh yeah.
Well, that's only going to confuse people.
That's right.
But
yeah,
if it's something
true.
Really whatever.
I'm just saying, Debbie, you can chime in.
If
you're really into large mounted solar projects.
Shush her anyway.
All right.
Anyway,
let's so. Just be quiet just in case.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so tonight we will start with the agenda. Did I read just the first one that we're going to work on? Okay.
Yeah,
we're going to have a discussion about a zoning amendment proposal, ground-mounted solar bylaw amendments in residential zoning districts. Tammy?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So, welcome everyone, Happy New Year. Very excited to get a new EDC series of meetings started. Hopefully the proposals tonight, we'll get the support of the committee. So the first proposal is actually a little bit, has a couple different sections to it. The first section I'm going to go through is the ground-mounted solar bylaw amendments, and then I'm going to also have Brian, our community planning director, talk about some of the house cleaning items that we're adding into this proposal. But the main reason for the proposal tonight before the EDC is dealing with large-scale ground-mounted solar farms. Several years ago, or maybe a little less than that, the previous administrator, myself and others, had expanded the solar bylaw essentially in a myriad of ways through either planning board special permit or by right in virtually every zoning district in the community, including most notably residential 1, 2, 3, 4. For folks, as a little bit of a background, some of the logic at that time was the solar project over on the Nunn's property over off of Union Street, been one of the most successful projects the town has engaged in years. That solar project, number one, that was tax-exempt land because it was for a religious purpose. So that actually added some property tax revenue to the rolls. There was, at the time, the agreements that were required by law were fairly lucrative, and there was a lot of municipal control over those agreements, and we had some leverage at the table, and so the town was able to enter an agreement at that time that produced an additional good revenue source for the town. And then the secret that most folks don't know, and I talk about it all the time, is that solar farm actually produces in excess of 90% of the electricity that we use for all of our school and town buildings. So that project, as we look back today, was a very unique one. But at the time, there was a lot of municipalities trying to expand solar throughout their zoning districts for exactly those purposes. It was a great revenue source, it was renewable energy. Traditionally, also, the solar farm was in a big field. There were no trees being cut down. There were no forests and stuff of that sort. So it was pretty much just going into a 10-acre site, plopping down a big, large solar farm, and getting all those reciprocal benefits. In the last few years since that change, many of these agreements, not in Franklin necessarily, but have been challenged through the court process. They've gone through the appellate tax board. The Department of Revenue was essentially ruled in a much different manner. There was some legislative stalling at some point because there was a megawatt capacity up in Beacon Hill. And at the end of the day, as I stand here today, looking over especially the last year, the Planning Board has had numerous solar farm proposals go through. I've heard a tremendous amount of concerns from residents about the some of the solar projects that have gone in or that have been proposed and maybe approved. And there wasn't really a mechanism for us to necessarily deny those because they're generally, you know, pretty much by right or you know, within the zoning. And so at the end of the day, in my estimate of negotiating some of these tax agreements over the past calendar year, the return on investment that we get for this initiative is just nowhere near or close to what it was a bunch of years ago when Jeff and the community had approved the solar farm up on Upper Union Street. And so what we're proposing here tonight is to, in the big picture, is to essentially remove large mounted solar farms from the main residential districts on the periphery of the community. When we go to the use table, let's see, it's 1, 2, 3, 4. So about 6 or 7 pages in, you'll go to the use table, the principal uses, to number 314. And Brian has done a great job color coding our sheets. And if you look in the green areas, you'll notice down in the bottom, large scale ground mounted solar energy system. We're basically in R1, R2, R4, and R3, single family residential 3. We're essentially taking away the special permit by right in those districts and putting it in no. So we're basically saying we're not going to allow those projects anymore. For all the reasons I just stated a moment ago, there's just not as much money in it for anymore. The agreements don't produce the revenue like they did. It's very foggy legal ground. And we've seen a lot of concerned citizens we're now into the era of folks buying a lot of land to just wipe out forests and just put in a solar farm, which doesn't, you know, I don't know if that's really what we intended when this bylaw went through a few years ago. The market has completely changed relative to these. What you find today, or what I find, is a lot of the agreements that we sign, the money actually isn't always the disagreement. It's the legal language about where you're required to go to court if there's a bankruptcy proceeding, and that is the most substantive thing that's taken me on these agreements over the last year, is that. You know there's a reason why they want to do business in court in some other state or some other place, and that's not in Franklin's interest at all. I found it to be that in a lot of cases, these solar farms are being bought up, they're being permitted, and then they're just being flipped to someone else, to typically a company that has a bad asset portfolio. We need something positive. And there's just been a tremendous amount of bankruptcy cases around a lot of these solar farms and these projects. And I question the sustainability of these deals where the revenues just are simply not as profound as what they were a few years ago. So I'm obviously happy to answer any of the questions. Just to note for the record, we are continuing to allow small scale solar for people's homes on roofs. That is certainly not a part of this. And we're actually keeping medium scale size by special permit at the Planning Board. And we are leaving in all of the additional solar criteria to maintain our status as a green community. It's not like we're getting rid of it altogether. Personal families and individual property owners can still do what they want. These are really solar farms in excess of, you know, an acre. These are really the 10-acre farms, the 15-acre ones, the 20 acres that we're really trying to take out of the bylaw. So, maybe, I don't know if you have anything to add on to that, Brian?
Yeah, there's just one more thing, sure. And that this will limit substantially the amount of town that can be actually covered with solar panels, which is good. But the other thing is a lot of people are complaining about a a solar field near a roadway, for instance, or next to a residential property or things of that nature. So with the, in addition to what Jamie just said, we're adding in, we're proposing to add in a note at the end of the same page here. No medium scale or large scale mounted, ground mounted solar on parcels within or adjacent to residential zoning districts shall be located nearer to the lot lines than 75 feet. That means you have to have a substantial setback. If you're gonna have it next to a residential house, you have to have a setback. Right now, you know, it could be 50 feet from your house and you're right there. And we've had a couple of problems like that, so. Some other towns have put in 50 feet, others have put in 100. We just come up with a number, and I think 75 works if you look at, in general.
I think we looked at other communities too. I think Bellingham was 75 feet. It seemed to be, it seemed to be responding to a lot of citizen comments. I think the planning board gets, others get, the 20 feet, 25 feet is just too thin. So Brian came up with the recommendation of 75. So.
Okay, thanks.
It's okay with you, Madam Chair. I would maybe just finish this conversation and then Brian can take on the additional house cleaning items as part of this proposal. After. It's part of this proposal,
like,
but it's up to you. If you want to go through that, we can go through that too.
I'd like to talk about the ground-mounted solar thing and get that done, and then move on to the other. Is that what you meant?
That's what I
meant. Yes, Glenn, you had a...
Just a question in regards to the locations that have been problems in residential zonings. Where in Franklin have we had this issue?
Well, I mean, the one permitted on Mount Street, for instance, that person put a house in, and then the sister's actually permitting another solar farm right next to his house. It's very close, there's no buffer. And so something like that, they would have to have a more of a setback. You'd still
Spring
see
Street.
It, but it wouldn't be right in their backyard.
I'm sorry, where else? Spring Street.
Yeah, and the third one's, it's right on the tip of my tongue, I can't remember. But there's, but Mount Street's the next one up. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to the Board of Assessors to get the agreement on Spring Street finalized. I hope they support that. But I've been negotiating with this company for 9 months. I've been in the legal fees. You have to hire an outside counsel that specializes in this. It's starting to get a little bit silly. And the money that we're getting in return for it is nowhere near what.
Yeah.
And that's the market. That's not just Franklin. That's everywhere. I think it's just a mature industry that's hit its level.
For years, I've had issue with these ground-mounted solar arrays in the first place for several reasons. One is, as you mentioned earlier, knocking down whole lots of trees for the purposes of trying to generate energy that, for all intents and purposes, solar-powered technology hasn't improved its efficiency above 20% in the existence of solar panels. They're very inefficient. They take up a tremendous amount of surface area that, for all intents and purposes, I'd rather breathe oxygen than have solar energy. In most cases. As far as the roof-mounted stuff goes, and as far as large roofs, like a building like this sustaining a solar panel on the roof makes complete sense. Yeah. Or even Big Y across the street where they have the roof line for it. Mm-hmm. But for us to go and just allow whole lots of land, acreage that could be purposed for recreation or even residential uses, it's just downright silly to me. And just the fact that we're coming up with locations that are already affecting residential zones, yes, I have no issue with minimizing the large solar panel arrays. They're terribly inefficient. I know we've been sold a bill of goods from the government, from the energy companies, on how significant we can offset things with green energy. This is not the way to do it. So I'm not surprised to see this, and I'm not surprised to hear what you have to say about the share of those going down.
Yes,
this day was inevitable.
Any comments, questions?
I would just sort of second Councilor Jones on all this. I think I would agree very much so that I think roof-mounted solar is a great idea, but unfortunately, as we do attempt to make these transitions toward more diversified energy stock, we have sort of been sold a little bit of a bill of goods on large solar projects, which in a state where they could be snowed in or where heavy rainfall, they could be muddy, covered in dirt and grime, have brush grow up around them and all that stuff. It's a very, very bad use of land in a state that's already starved for land. I recall my conversations with a professor of agronomy at UMass Amherst who went so far as to suggest we should have a state moratorium on solar farms. I'm not sure if I would go quite that far, but I think it's a good measure that we're thinking of adopting here. So,
great. Andy, would you like to add?
So I just want to be clear on, while we have a planning board member here, which one of these are done deals? Isn't Spring Street and Mount Street done deals?
Both of those, I believe, both of those have been approved by the planning board. And there is a third, I just can't remember off the top of
my head. But what were you saying? There's still...
Oh, there wasn't? Was there a third applicant?
It's in the industrial land.
The Bellingham. Oh, that's right, on Maple.
So, Jamie, what are you talking about when you're saying you're still kind of negotiating with them? Or on the business end, is that what you're saying?
There's a tax agreement required by law for essentially... It's not a payment in lieu of taxes, it's a traditional pilot, but you have to have a tax agreement on the equipment. So you can't actually enter into an agreement any longer that deals with the property tax element, which is actually bad for the solar industry as well. But that's and our state representative, I should note, not at my request, but our state representative, Jeff Roy, has actually filed legislation to correct this issue because of an appellate tax case that went through a couple years ago, which essentially rendered the decision that property tax, you know, real estate itself, the land itself is the land itself. You can only go into a tax agreement on the actual nuts and bolts and solar panels of the improvement to the property. That is not what the agreement was with the town on the Nuns property, and that's why the Nuns project over there is such a unique project, and it's such a good one for everybody, including them. That it was just, you know, looking back now, I think that there was an idea at one point, I think Jeff thought the same thing, that that could be potentially replicated somewhere else. And it's just, in those few years, or a couple years since we did that bylaw, the market's completely changed. And to Councilor Earls's point, the moratorium is an interesting concept because actually, by the lack of inaction by the legislature for many years of upping the megawatt capacity of solar, they kind of almost indirectly did have a moratorium for a couple of years. There was a backlog of solar projects for a couple of years, and that's why the planning board and the town, and not just us, but many communities have seen this huge rush of solar applications, is because there was such a big backlog for so many years. All these projects were pent up, and then they came in, and then it just kind of hit us all at once, in addition to the court cases, in addition to some other things, that it just kind of rendered these projects, I think, maybe not as advantageous as this.
But again, I want to be clear. If I was the owner of Spring Street, I wouldn't go out and buy a yacht in Boston. Is that what you're saying? Or is that a done deal?
No. Those are done.
That's
There's an issue with that property. There's an issue with the Spring Street. There's three parcels.
Okay.
And one parcel, the center parcel, is being contested because two people have a deed for the property. Mm-hmm. So therefore, the owner of the property never signed the application for the special permit. Mm-hmm. There's a big, two people have a deed each that says they own that property.
That's an element that has come up recently, but that has not been a piece of any of the negotiations I've had that will be before the Board of Assessors tomorrow. The Board of Assessors will be looking at the tax agreement that I negotiated with them, which I want to, if I recall, is about $1.2 million over 20 years. That's just for the equipment. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, the property will be appraised by the assessors just as they normally go, and there will obviously be an improvement to the property. The issues Mr. Halligan's speaking to is something that those private entities are going to have to work on their own.
That
has nothing to do with...
But we wouldn't see any revenue until that's straightened up.
And all that.
Obviously, because nothing would be built.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So hold on a second. So, Andy, your question is, if we change this bylaw, will that Spring Street still be able to go in? Is that what you want to know?
Absolutely. But depending on Jamie, I'm also questioning Jamie's negotiations as far as monetarily speaking. Where and how does that gel and you know, make this happen? Okay, and like, let's say all the title issues are squared away, and it moves on from A to B to C to D. Can this all fall apart because you guys can't get together on language? Is that a reality?
It was a possibility up until the proponent of the project and I agreed on the agreement a couple weeks ago, right before the new year, And then again, it'll be before the Board of Assessors tomorrow. So if the Board of Assessors decide they don't want to support the agreement, then I'm back to the drawing board with the owner, and we don't know what's going to happen with the title issues. Would I be willing to bet you that that won't happen? I would be willing to hope the assessors would support the agreement. They'll figure out their title issues. The property owners over there will be able to enter into their lease and all whatever they're doing, and the project will go forward. There are some other benefits that come out of that project via the planning board process. There's a new municipal parking lot that will be up there for trail access. They're paving a large section of Spring Street. They're putting in utilities. There's a variety of other things that are going on as part of that deal that we want to see done. And so I would hope that that wouldn't fall through. I can't speak to the legalese of the land issues that are over there. I'm just dealing with the owner on the actual equipment.
Right. In summary, my conclusion, I'm just saying I've sat down with these guys, with Mr. Nutty, a couple councils terms ago, and I always thought it was really convoluted with these tax credits back and forth and
it is.
The future and stuff like that. So
it's getting worse.
I would support this anyway. It's gotten worse? Great.
Yeah. No, it really has.
I hated it 2 terms ago.
Just for some informational purposes also, through the special permit process, we made these people put up a bond that if for some reason the project fails, there was money aside to replant trees and to put this, not just to leave an empty field.
Right.
So that was worked out in the special permit also.
Yeah, it's a good policy.
It's good.
Yeah, it's a great policy.
Okay, so I think that, you know, you guys, Brian's done a very thorough job here, and I really like the idea of having the setback on the scenic roads, because we have our old farmlands up on the scenic roads, and to have that, have the ground. This is just the large scale ground mounted solar, to remind everybody. I think you start thinking about solar, you think about it up on, up on the houses and everything. I have a question about the business zone. So it was a planning board thing, and we've changed that one to no as well.
Right. I'm proposing that because we have very little existing undeveloped business zone property in town.
Right.
So having it all become solar fields is probably not the best use of land. So that's the reason I'm proposing.
Okay. Right. I just wanted to be thorough in our discussions. All right. So I think we were all in agreement. I would. Entertain a motion to move this.
So moved.
To the
second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so we'll move the this. Is that okay to vote on this one, get it done?
Absolutely.
And then so now we will vote, we will talk, discuss the house cleaning items and the mixed business innovation district and house cleaning items and accessory uses for agriculture and poultry to comply with zoning setbacks. So that's B and C of the agenda.
So really quickly, Madam Chair, before I turn over to Brian, if folks just go to the use table to the first page of principal uses, the top heading is agriculture, horticulture. I'm going to let Brian go through the list, but most of the changes, if not all of them, Brian, are in the Mixed Business Innovation District, and these were some house cleaning items from the zoning proposal that we put forth last year on the Clark Cutler property, and I know Brian has a couple of other house cleaning items to add in, so
right.
You know, Brian, you want
sure.
to take it?
So the reason for this is because we had a lot of zoning bylaw amendments being related to the use regulations going through during a couple of fiscal years.
Mm-hmm.
And as one passed, and we've already have another one out there floating around, one would pass, and then we say, okay, well, you know, so we kept going, we passed the second one, and then we passed the third one and the fourth one, or whatever the case may be. And then we have, then we look at them and say, okay, now we have two note number nines, or we have, you know, so that's what this is all about, is cleaning up things like that. If we had taken them one at a time every 6 months, you wouldn't be doing this, but there are a lot of things that were happening all at the same time. So, including, for instance, the mixed business innovation zone, that was passed and we hadn't even put in the chart, the solar ground, you know, things like that, and the poultry, for instance,
right.
Things of that nature. So that's the reason for them, and I can go over them all, but in general, that's exactly what it is. There were about five bylaws, and they're all all related one way or the other, and they were all passed at different, you know, in a, one after another after another. So
if you look at the areas in yellow, on mixed business innovation, obviously there was a no in there, on the mixed business with poultry.
No poultry.
Nope. Told you.
I had to say something.
Go ahead, Brian.
Come on. It's all good with me. It's okay.
Right. And on the next page, some of the manufacturing and processing.
Right.
We're changing one of the notes.
That's again, just the, I'm sorry. That's just place. The note number.
That's right? Just a note number. Yeah. And
so it's kind of small.
And Brian had just mentioned it, that, you know, the notes, but as it, all of you may remember for your, you know, I know you follow this, Council Visanti, but we were trying to get out of some of the industrial areas around Clark Cutler, some of the hazardous material related uses that were in the zoning code. I think now since that parcel was built out, there's been a lot of residences around of it. Maybe we need more amenities, a little less hazardous materials would be a good thing. So we've updated that on that page. And then on the final chart, just to note, you'll see a lot of yellow on the bottom with agriculture and poultry in a lot of residential districts to change over the notes at the bottom. So, but these are accessory uses, just to make sure you follow up in the top left corner. These are not principal uses, right? So correct. Just to make sure that the folks are aware.
Pass this way. Here we are. Yeah, all yellow.
So
correct, yeah. And another example is, on the same page, we had two uses that were called A19. So one of them has to be A20. That's all. So yeah. Those are, yeah. That's all. Those are the type of things we're cleaning up. Mm-hmm.
We figured we'd do all these in one zoning proposal, so that when it goes to the council, you know, we don't have to have you do multiple
again.
Yeah. Multiple votes, you know, multiple hearings, multiple postings in the newspaper.
Right.
Right. And it's all in the same, it's the use tables, right. Period. That's
right.
All.
It's just the
all the changes are in that.
Okay. Councilor Jones?
Just a great question.
Okay.
Obviously, I get the cleanup of this makes sense. But since we've made these changes, has there been a lot of interest in this poultry?
That's a question.
I never dealt with them before, so I don't really know. But, I mean, I don't really, I haven't heard
a
lot of
people here. To
I haven't really heard a lot of permits or anything.
Just remember, the mixed business innovation, you know, we haven't seen anything. I still think I don't think it's been finalized about exactly.
Oh, I thought you were talking about poultry.
No, poultry.
But yeah. The mixed business innovation is actually getting exciting right now. It's actually, it's a lot of things that are starting to happen, so.
Oh, even with that, okay.
Yeah, but the poultry, I have no idea. I don't see anything related to it on a day-to-day basis.
What's happened on the mixed business?
Well, I can tell you that. I can tell you that.
That's right down the street from my house.
Yeah, there is, the property will be closing on the 21st of January.
Okay.
They agreed on a price finally after a couple of years, all this kind of stuff, and
sale closing.
Anybody, what's that?
A sale closing.
A closing of the sale of the property, okay. Will change hands that day. So the individual wanted it quiet up to a couple of weeks ago. Now he's fine. He's running around town trying to get some things done. It's Rick Kaplan, is a realtor in town, mm-hmm. Actually in the area, and he and at least one other partner are going in to purchase the property.
Oh,
and
Rick's buying it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. 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 So they have the sale going through, and he's actually gonna move his office into the front building in the near future, and do a lot of things. So
cool.
Yeah.
Good to hear.
Now I know why he will return phone calls.
Just keep it quiet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody else have any other questions about the
nope.
Housekeeping?
Motion to move any changes necessary.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No. All right. Send it all together to the council. And then it would go to the council to the planning board? Or just
so the council will then vote on referral to the planning board. The planning board will then hold a hearing. And then they'll make any adjustments, changes, support it, not, whatever, send it back presumably to the council, and then you'll have to have the typical two readings.
Okay. Awesome. All right, let's move along to item two, lot line cleanup number one, areas near Highland, Maple, and Lincoln Streets. Who's going to take this one, Brian?
I'd be happy
take
to.
Take it away.
Go for it,
so
Brian.
We, a couple of years ago, we actually, I'm going to go back. You could actually take this project go back about 15 or more years, actually, because this the changing the actually zoning lines where they are from the middle of the parcels to actually to the edge of a parcel mm-hmm. has been going on for about that long. But we took it up a couple of years ago and we put out, I think, 6 bylaws related to that at that time. We're working on another 6 right now, and there'll be more after that. But the first of the two that we're working on are in front of you tonight. So again, this is where a parcel was when at least 2 zoning districts. It can be 3 or 4 or 5. If it, occasionally it's that high, but normally it's only 2. Okay, so if you go to the bylaw, and you could probably understand it better just by going to several pages down to the diagram that shows the map.
Mm-hmm.
This
one? The
color-coded
one?
The color one, yes, right. So each color is a different zoning district. So if you have a parcel that is 2 different colors, you know that that's in 2 different zoning districts. So the idea is to move the line that separates the 2 districts to a boundary, a parcel boundary, okay?
Right.
So there are here about, what, how many are there? Maybe about 15, 20 different parcels, and they're all changed a little. Just to let you know that, you know, up Lincoln Street farther, there will be more amendments up that way. There'll be some on Maple Street, there'll be some on Oak Street, they'll be all over the place. But this one here is basically takes in that central area there. The majority of the parcels are actually rural residential too. Most of the parcels are, and so I moved the lines down to, so the whole parcels are rural residential too, in most cases. But in some cases, for instance, over on Lincoln Street, there was, the lots are a little bit bigger and there is a slight chance that we'd be taking away a little bit if, for instance, it was 3 and 2. So I made them single family residential 3 mm-hmm. instead, because we don't want to take the chance that we're taking away from the value of their property for development purposes. Okay, so
how you decided, like, what?
Yeah, it's based on land use and it's based on what could be done with the property. And if the house, if you have a half acre lot with a house in the middle of, you're not going to be able to do much with it. So it doesn't really matter where the lot line goes. Yeah, with the zoning line goes.
Yeah.
But in some cases, it may make a difference, and I try to be careful of those when I put these together.
Do the least restrictive zoning.
The least?
Mm-hmm. With the least restrictive, correct, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And then just kind of a background question, when there's a split zone like this, like does, how does it fit into a use table?
Section
of the lot?
In the past, when somebody puts a site plan out for a commercial development, for instance,
right,
and you have a lot, you have the zoning going right through it, you have 2 different requirements.
Okay.
So the requirements of one can go a certain amount of distance, and I can't think of it's 100 feet or whatever it is, into the other side,
right,
for instance, you know. So this gets away from all of that by going just with one zone per parcel.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
All right.
Does anybody have any questions about these parcels?
This is nothing new.
No, it's definitely not.
We have seen a few of these already.
Yes, sir.
So some of us have. I'm sure Councilor Bassan has as well.
Yeah.
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 Question? On the Lincoln Street side there,
yeah,
I can see nothing of the proposed has really changed. You still have a split zone between some lots?
Sorry, say that again. I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you
said. I believe that's Lincoln Street to the far right.
Yeah.
And as you go
farther to the north, you're saying?
Yeah, about halfway up.
That's going to be an additional bylaw amendment. We can't go, I have probably 2 more north of there
easy
coming.
Oh, okay. So
and I have some more up Oak Street. I, you know, they're this is, you gotta try to take a neighborhood or a section at a time.
So what you're showing here isn't what it is.
So Joe,
What's showing here?
The red outline lots are the ones that are.
Proposed change. I'm sorry.
It only goes up to that.
He doesn't have his glasses.
That red line on the right.
You've got future stuff to cover.
There's absolutely, yeah. And just on that note, there are some parcels that may not get changed in the end. I know that one of the, this that we did a couple of years ago, that people came and objected to the change, so we didn't change it.
Yeah, we did down by the Union Street area.
There's actually two different ones that you guys had voted on at one point where there was some.
The only thing I appreciate, Brian, is that you're taking the due diligence to check on these lots to make sure that they're used, are fair to the property owners. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Mistakes are made, but essentially, that's the best you can do.
It takes time.
They all get notification, they all gotta come out, they get multiple bites of the apple. They go to the planning board and make the same comments.
Right.
They come back to us, the council level, do the same thing. So everybody gets a fair shake at it. And a couple times we did have objections and we modified it. In fact, Councilor Kelly also had an objection at one point to one of them. Made a great argument on one of the cul-de-sacs at one point. You switched it up.
Right.
When you change a zoning law, can you actually checkerboard it down a neighborhood? I mean, is that proper to do that? It's just one person comes in the neighborhood and says, I don't want to change my zoning, and he's got to vote
on the
size.
They have to make a reasonable argument.
An excellent point. That's.
I don't want to change my zoning, and you said that we allow them to keep it, and then it's
and
two some, different
it's,
zones.
It's really a town council vote. It really comes right down to it.
I mean, they got to kind of weigh. Big picture of that piece and exactly the point you're making with whatever the
for the whole neighborhood. Councilor Passanti?
Just through the chair to town planner to Berner. I don't have the intensity use schedule quite memorized, but the difference between residential 3 and 2, I don't think there's a difference, but one does allow two fam by right, and I think 2 also does.
Oh, you mean residential, second family, a second unit?
I have the size schedule.
Mm-hmm. So clearly 3 does allow right, I believe. That could be a rub for some people, I don't know.
All right, so conversion from 1 to 2.
Conversion, 1 by?
General residential 5.
No, 3 and 2.
No, there's 1, 2, and 6 to 7 are all regulated the same. 3 and 4 is the same. So it's there's really no change. If you have if you want to convert, if you're in residential 4 or residential 5, and you want to convert from one family to a two family, you can go to ZBA for a special permit.
Okay.
But the other zones you don't.
Are you sure about that?
Well, that's what I'm looking at. But
I believe residential 5 is 1 unit per 1,000 square feet.
Oh yeah,
5 is 1 unit per 1,000.
Oh, absolutely.
Four is.
They're not in 5.
Yeah, if you want to, talk about that, that's
in the change
right here.
I just can't see where it says.
Special permit ZBA, I think. Yeah,
I know because I did it.
Yeah, your parcel is coming on. You have a split lot. We'll be dealing with you in the future. So.
I did it, but I'm just saying I just got. I can't see where it says 1 and 2 families.
It's on a different attachment schedule.
I don't see the.
It's
I just
on
don't
a
have
what
that
number, Brian?
No,
so, it's on a different page. It's not on the same
that's
attachment.
That's not on this page, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, we have.
Right. So.
You got the dimensional one as attachment 9, and then you also have the residential schedule, which there's no changes to it, so it's not in that amendment.
Right. I'm just saying it could. Maybe it won't be good. Would be a point you may want to pay attention to.
I would entertain a motion to move this forward to the town council.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, Pat, let's move it forward.
Keep it moving.
Okay, number three on the agenda is lot line cleanup number two near Oak Street and Daly Drive. Take it away, Brian.
That's pretty much exactly the same thing, but different parcels. All right, so there's we took care of the far end, I call it, of Oak Street on this one. And the other one was on the other end of Oak Street, so we actually have between those two, we actually have two more amendments coming in the future. So quite a few of these are actually town-owned properties. Mm-hmm. We zoned those, put those as rural residential two. Where a parcel was split, where it was mostly two, we kept it all two. We made it all two and the other way around. I don't believe there was any changes in the actual ability to construct because these are all built out properties except for the town owned ones. Mm-hmm. So that's the same thing. I wanted to mention one thing quickly about as far as how these people are notified, just to give you. If you approve these and they're going to council, we find out when they go to the council, a letter goes in the mail to each of the property owners that are getting changed.
Okay.
Then when we find out when the public hearings are,
okay,
then public hearing notices give out to them plus all abutting properties 300 feet out.
How soon before the public hearing do they get the letters?
Well, they get public hearing notices, it's what, a week in advance or something to that effect. The letters will, depending on when this goes to council, I mean, we will put those things out by next week in the mail, the letters. I don't know when it's going to be scheduled for
you.
So we will talk about that tomorrow is what we normally do. Okay. So we try to get them out in advance. And then the public hearing, they also get the public hearing notice in the mail.
Right.
All their abutting properties do also. And that's the best we can do, really. I mean, if it's I don't think anything else. The only other thing is when we have some things, for instance, when we did the mixed business innovation zone, we were creating a new district. It was hands on talking to every person personally.
Right.
But obviously that's not. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's required really if we're doing this. We'd never get anything done if that were the case.
Usually the. Most of the time, the letters really serve as a good notification, and the vast majority of the times, Brian or Amy will get a phone call, and they'll talk to the property owner about why this zone least restrictive, more than 50%, you can't do this, you can't do that, this is the future of your property. We've had many folks come in and ask us a lot of questions, like, mm-hmm. can I do this in the future? Oh, I was thinking about selling my house or these various things. So. In some ways, it's actually a good communication tool for a lot of people, too, to give them some good information about what they can do with their property. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had one person stand at the counter, why didn't you tell me you were doing this? Well, we just did with that letter that we sent you. I mean, you felt like saying, I didn't actually say that, but that's what I felt like saying.
You did now. Reporter.
Well, that's fine. I didn't mention any names.
So too.
The fact is, I mean, we do our best to, the communications are very, very important. And we take the time to answer. I'll stand at the counter or I'll stand on the phone for a long period of time to
meet with them. You've sat down with several people.
Yeah, many
before.
Times. Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm.
I've sat down with a few when it gets up upstairs.
Right. Very good.
In addition to the abutters notice, it goes out on the newspaper, mm-hmm. Legal Ad, and on the town website.
Right. Very true.
Right. Yeah. Okay, Steve Sherman.
Yeah, I just add to Brian's comments because my property was part of one of your changes so I can confirm I did get the three notifications, once to the first town council, second to the planning board, and then third back to the town council again. So
the system
I got it.
Yeah, plenty of information.
It was there.
I think legally that the town of Franklin is a city, mm-hmm. with a council that I believe it's not even required to do the mailings.
Counts.
That's right.
The town council can change zoning without notifying anybody.
Right.
Neighborhoods.
That's very true. I've asked Mark. Mark Sorrell on that, and it's been times he said basically it's overkill what we're doing, and I said, well, if we don't do it, we're going to hear about it.
Right.
So we want to tell, we want to make sure that
it's a service.
You're never going to get a complaint from me.
Yeah. I think the more reach out, the more communication, the better.
The point I'm making is that the citizens should be happy on what we do to notify them and to allow them to become part of this. Where some municipalities can just change the zone with no notification to the residents.
Yeah.
Sorry. Councilor Jones?
Yeah, just a quick question in regards to Matt, so we can get things moving along as well. You said earlier when we were on the other zoning map that you take into consideration, you just said a few minutes ago too, that any lots that are a certain percentage less than 50% of what they are, you bring them down to whatever the largest
the norm
percentage.
Yeah,
the norm. Like for instance, how did you make a decision on 24, which is that kind of pot shaped lot? That one which borders Daily Drive, or did they have any issue with the fact that they were restricting their property more on Daily Drive? Granted, it's Daily Drive. I know the name as well.
Yeah, so you're talking about, lot 024, okay, on Daily Drive. The reason on that case is that subdivision in general is zoned that certain district.
Right.
Okay, so if anything was fronting Daily Drive, I attempted to put it that same zone.
Right, to get the whole area the same.
Yeah. And that's the way the property is entered.
Right.
So it can't come down off Old Street. So.
Okay. Any other questions?
Nope.
Councilor Bassanti?
If I put my appraisers hat on, these are not going to affect values. No. I mean, not that you, I mean, if you
that. Once in a blue moon, they do. Yeah. But yeah, normally. Yeah.
Okay. I think we're ready to entertain a motion.
Motion. So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, let's move this off to the top council.
All right,
so
did you find
what you're saying? Entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? Overall, if you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. And if you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.